Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 18, Texts 24 and 25. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Ekada Danur Ujjamya Vicharan Nigayam Vane Magananugata Santa Shuditas Trishito Vrisham Jalashayam Chakshana Pavivesha Tarasramam Dadarsha Muni Masinam Shantam Milatalochanam. Once upon a time, Maharaj Prickett, while engaged in hunting in the forest with bows and arrows, became extremely fatigued, hungry, and thirsty while following the stags. While searching for a reservoir of water, he entered the hermitage of the well-known Shamika Rishi and saw the sage sitting silently with closed eyes, purport. The Supreme Lord is so kind to his pure devotees that in proper time he calls such devotees up to him and thus creates an auspicious circumstance for the devotees. Maharaj Prickett was a pure devotee of the Lord, and there was no reason for him to become extremely fatigued, hungry, and thirsty, because a devotee of the Lord never becomes perturbed by such bodily demands. But by the desire of the Lord, even such a devotee can become apparently fatigued and thirsty just to create a situation favorable for his renunciation of worldly activities. One has to give up all attachment for worldly relations before one is able to go back to Godhead. And thus, when a devotee is too much absorbed in worldly affairs, the Lord creates a situation to cause indifference. The Supreme Lord never forgets his pure devotee, even though he may be engaged in so-called worldly affairs. Sometimes he creates an awkward situation and the devotee becomes obliged to renounce all worldly affairs. The devotee can understand by the signal of the Lord, but others take it to be unfavorable and frustrating. Maharaj Prickett was to become the medium for the revelation of the Srimad Bhagavatam by Lord Sri Krishna. As his grandfather Arjuna was the medium for the Bhagavad Gita, had Arjuna not been taken up with an illusion of family affection by the will of the Lord, the Bhagavad Gita would not have been spoken by the Lord himself for the good of all concerned. Similarly, had Maharaj Prickett not been fatigued, hungry, and thirsty at this time, Srimad Bhagavatam would not have been spoken by Srila Shukadev Goswami, the prime authority of Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is a prelude to the circumstances under which Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken for the benefit of all concerned. The prelude therefore begins with the words, "Once upon a time." Om Jnanatimarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmulatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivasade Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Hare Hare. So we are In the section of Sutta Goswami's description of Maharaj Parikit's life, in response to the questions of the sages of Naimisharanya about the history of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is its history of its speakers and hearers. So at the beginning of this chapter, Sutta Goswami begins to describe his renunciation and death, because he had already described his birth and activities. Of course, therefore it's saying once upon a time. In other words, he's going to continue now to explain the story. This is verse 25 of the chapter, 24 and 25. So the first 23 verses of the chapter are just this wonderful exchange between the speaker, Sutta Goswami, and the hearer, Shonaka Rishi. A wonderful exchange about Krishna Katha and the beauty of Krishna Katha and the beauty of hearing Krishna Katha from the pure devotee. Again, if we remember back, the first verses were by Sutta Goswami's mercy, he was trying to increase the interest of the sages of Naimisharanya in the topics. Personally, I don't know what he could say to increase their interest anymore. They're so eager to hear. But the nature of Krishna Katha, as explained here, is that it's apurvatam, which means unprecedented. It's always new. And it's unlimited. Even the same pastimes are unlimited, because the Srimad Bhagavatam is chit shakti. But again, he repeated because the subject matter is Maharaj Parikit. The subject of Maharaj Parikit is no different than the subject of Krishna, because he's a devotee. And the devotee consciousness is just imbued with thoughts of Krishna. So when you hear or associate with the devotee, you are hearing or associating directly with Krishna. And hearing about the devotee is as good as hearing about Krishna. In fact, according to our Vaishnava philosophy, Panchatattva, five aspects of the Absolute Truth. And the aspect of the Absolute Truth by which he reveals himself is the devotee. So the devotee is simply a manifestation of the revelation of Krishna. And therefore, the Srimad Bhagavatam is simply about the devotees of Krishna, which means it's about Krishna. Nashta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya. Prabhupada describes that nityam, we should serve the devotees, and serving the devotees means the person Bhagavat and the book Bhagavat, and they're no different, because the person Bhagavat speaks about the book Bhagavat. And the book Bhagavat is simply about the person Bhagavat, both the Lord and his devotees. So he began to describe Maharaj Parikit's wonderful qualities. And basically, the real quality that he describes about Maharaj Parikit, this is a new point, which gives a little hint that it's ever expanding, because I discussed it every day for a week. That the real point, what was his glory? His glory was the mercy of Krishna and the mercy of the devotee. Described he got the mercy of Krishna because Krishna appeared in his womb. And he got the mercy of Krishna because at the moment of death he was not overwhelmed and he was free from fear. And then it describes that he gets the mercy of his devotee. So this is really the glory of a devotee. The glory of a devotee is his surrender and humility, and therefore his becoming a receptacle for the mercy of Krishna. And in fact, in Sanskrit, the devotee is called Ashraya. Of course, Krishna is Ashraya in terms of the ultimate shelter, but Ashraya means also a receptacle or the subject. And Krishna is known as Vishaya, which means the object. So the very basis and constitution of the devotee
is that he is a receptacle for love of Godhead. He's a receptacle for Krishna's mercy. And that mercy and love flows from his heart. And it flows towards Krishna. So whenever you hear about the devotee, you're hearing about his love of Krishna. So you can't separate. You can't separate the two. So he enthused them in that way, and also enthused them about Maharaj Prickett's activities, that the influence of Kali could not take place. As soon as, very nice verse, as soon as Krishna disappeared, do you remember what those words are? Ahani, that very day, Yara Eva, that very moment that Krishna disappeared, Kali appeared. But in the presence of the representative of Krishna, either the king or the pure devotee, then Kali cannot be manifest. And that was the whole pastime we read before. So either the powerful king, Kali cannot manifest, or the devotee who is speaking Krishna Katha. Because Krishna Katha means the Bhagavatam, and the Bhagavatam means the manifestation of Krishna. The manifestation of Krishna, the manifestation of Krishna Katha, there cannot be any irreligion, there cannot be any inauspiciousness. It's so powerful. And then, of course, the sages of Naimisharanya, they responded by glorifying Suta Goswami and glorifying hearing from a devotee such as Suta Goswami and glorifying Krishna Katha. Remember, we have just begun the sacrifice, and we have some anavashe, I believe is the word, anashvase. We have some uncertainty or doubt. We have no doubt about Krishna Katha. We have no doubt. We are factually pleased. It's very pleasing. The smoke is coming. We're getting... our bodies are becoming black with the smoke. This is the result of the yajna. What will be the ultimate result? But Krishna Katha, we are factually pleased. Right now we are pleased. We're not waiting for any result. We're pleased right now by the nectar of the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead Govinda, which you are distributing. And there were so many wonderful verses glorifying Krishna and his devotees. And Shonaka Rishi, therefore described the unlimited. And then Suta Goswami, in a humble mood, describes his lack of qualification to describe the unlimited. Ultimately, it's Krishna who has to describe himself by manifesting within the heart of the speaker. So he discusses his birth. I am low born, but I have... See, we're here, we kind of have a summary every day, but I don't think we get tired of the summary. It's just so nice. This verse he said, Viloma Jata, born in a mixed caste, but Janma Brita, promoted in birth, by serving those advanced in knowledge. By serving those advanced in knowledge, even by conversing with the great soul, one can cleanse oneself of all the disqualification of low birth, all sinful activities. Simply by conversing with the great soul. And Prabhupada said this word for conversing, which is abhidhana, conversation with great souls. This word conversation also means dictionary. So even by conversing with the dictionary of great souls, dictionary means words. Words of great souls, Prabhupada means the Bhagavatam. So by conversing with the Bhagavatam, all disqualification is gone. So he glorified, and what to speak of taking direction of the great devotees who are chanting the holy name of the unlimited. What to speak of taking shelter of the devotees. And then he begins to describe Krishna's glories, his supreme independent nature, which also indicates his feeling of personal incapability of glorifying Krishna properly by his own power. Because Krishna is unlimited, and this word Ananta is described, he's unmeasurable, and he's the supreme absolute truth. He's the ultimate substance of everything. That's Krishna, the material, the spiritual energy. This is Krishna. It's all his energy. And when you're seeing not Krishna, you're in Maya. Because everything is Krishna or Krishna's energy. And it's that person. And therefore, that was a beautiful verse also, where, what did it say? That, remember the verse we said, who has worth, ka artha, who is worth of the pada, the position, locate within the world, who can be worthy of the name, the nama, Bhagavat or Supreme Lord, Mukunda, except Krishna, except Mukunda or Krishna. Who can be worthy of that name? So therefore, he's feeling very, very humble, which is the mood for service, the mood for executing devotional service is humbly making oneself an instrument for Krishna, because it's only by his power that we can speak, it's his power that we can serve. So therefore, we have this sense of asabandha, hope against hope. That's one of the symptoms of Baba Bhakti, hope against hope. What is our hope? What is our no hope? Our no hope is our own qualification. Rupa Goswami says, I'm not born in a good family. I have no attachment to the nine processes of devotional service. I can't do this. But what is the hope? The hope is that Krishna is merciful. He's kind. Therefore, he gives to one who is not deserving. And that's the hope. That's the hope, that Krishna reciprocates our dependence with his care and affection. And he protects us. He preserves what we have and carries what we lack. This is the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And therefore, before speaking, any proper devotee offers, before speaking, before chanting, before worshiping the deity, before writing a book, it's always prayers, pranams, to the devotees and the parampara. And getting rid of the sense of ahamkara, I am, ahamkara, I am the doer. The illusion of the material world, I am the doer. I am independent. I have powers. I can control. I can enjoy. Getting rid of the false ego, the false conception of the self. Because if one is in the false conception of the self, his abilities and activities are limited to his own karma. And our karma does not allow us to approach the absolute truth. It's not our karma. Our karmic abilities will not allow us to approach the absolute truth. That karmic abilities is our destiny. Our destiny is not to go back to Godhead. It's our Krishna conscious reaction that enables us to go back to Godhead. So there has to be that sense that that's not in our hands and it's not in our destiny. It's in the will and mercy of Krishna. So he now, and then he said that I shall describe you as far as my knowledge is concerned. As the birds fly in the sky as far as they could learn it, describe the Lord as far as their realization allows. And therefore, Prabhupada says, factually, only the Lord can describe himself, and his learned devotee also can describe him as far as the Lord gives him the power of description. So now he begins to speak in a very humble way, and he begins to describe the story of Maharaj Prickett's renunciation. And I'll read that verse again. Once upon a time, Maharaj Prickett, while engaged in hunting in the forest with bow and arrows, became extremely fatigued, hungry, and thirsty while following the stags. While searching for a reservoir of water, he entered the hermitage with a well-known Shamakarishi and saw the sage sitting silently with closed eyes. So, Prabhupada discusses this, and we'll see these verses are very amazing, that it's unprecedented that Maharaj Prickett, first of all, he's a great devotee, never becomes perturbed by bodily demands, and therefore never becomes angry when they're not satisfied. That's the describing Bhagavad Gita, Jayato Vishyam Pumsa, Sangos Tesho Vijayate, Sangat Sanjayate Kama Kama. It's your meditation and your attachments that cause your frustration and anger. So here's this pure devotee becoming angry. There's no reason. The Prabhupada describes how this was just the desire of the Lord to create a situation favorable for his renunciation of worldly activities. I'm going to read a lot of this. One has to give up all attachment for worldly relations before one is able to go back to Godhead. And thus, when a devotee is too absorbed in worldly affairs, the Lord creates a situation to cause indifference. Unprecedented. He creates situations. He says, and Prabhupada calls it also an auspicious situation. So he cursed to save, he's cursed to die. What did Krishna arrange for him? Krishna arranged for him that the last 7 days of his life he wouldn't get any food or water. And he would be sitting in a room with a snake that's about to bite him to death. This was the mercy of Krishna. And this circumstance leads, a lot of times we do something, we say, we wish we never did that. So Krishna created this situation. Sometimes, I'm going to read the purport again, the Supreme Lord never forgets his pure devotee, even though he may engage in so-called worldly affairs. Sometimes he creates an awkward situation, and the devotee becomes obliged to renounce all worldly affairs. So sometimes he's in an incredible situation, and everybody looks at him and saying, why is this happening to this poor fellow? What is going on? But the sincere devotee, Prabhupada said, every sentence in this purport is amazing. The devotee can understand by the signal of the Lord, but others take it to be unfavorable and frustrating. So others say, oh, this is terrible. What's happening? But the devotee in his heart, he can understand the signal of the Lord. Because the Lord is actually dealing with him very personally. And a sincere devotee has that sense. So he can understand what's happening to him as others may not be able to understand it. Because if he's sincere, his circumstances... Anyway, we can understand philosophically that our destiny or how the world moves around us is a perfect arrangement of the absolute truth to purify us. So how the world is moving around us is very much connected with what's inside of us. So the devotee can actually see that. This incredible explosion and circumstance around him, he's seeing that it's caused by what's in my heart. And Krishna is trying to remove it. And therefore the environment is moving like this. And therefore he feels a very intimate sense with Krishna that he knows me because he's acting personally towards me. So he's realizing that Krishna knows me and he's kindly removing this. And others are saying, you know, would you let up already? There's one, I don't know if it's like there's a joke, Dadu. It's about a Jewish fellow, right? And he goes to heaven and he sees God, right? Now the Jewish people, they consider themselves the chosen people because they were chosen, right? So he went to God and he wanted to see God, but it was a New Yorker, so he was a little bit rude. So then God came, right? And God said, yes, what do you want? He said, is it true that we are the chosen people? You know, he said, Jews suffered through history also a lot, right? So God says, yes. And he looks at him and he said, will you mind choosing someone else next time?
The tiger wants to eat the same.
So by Krishna's mercy, he's creating situations to give himself. But he can't give himself as long as we're attached to other things in this world. So that favorable situation, when he sees the devotee is ready, he may take away the material situation so that he can give himself. We see that with Raghunath Das Goswami. He makes all arrangements. So this is Krishna's mercy. And therefore, sometimes we'll see some situation. In this case, it's unprecedented. Because, and the two examples are very interesting. One is Maharaj Parikit, who, you know, felt this hunger and thirst and then got angry and insulted the sage, which is unprecedented. And the other was his grandfather, Arjuna, who fell into illusion, kutas tvam kajmi lamidam, vishame samupastidam, anarya justam asvargyam. Where is these impurities come upon you? You're an Aryan. That you're not fit someone who knows. You know, weeping over the family, and he's a Kshatriya, it's the Vedic culture. You know, simple principles of life to do your duty, and he's weeping. Why should I fight? He's overwhelmed. So we can understand that this is Krishna's arrangement, because Krishna wants to appear to Maharaj Parikit in the form of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And he can't do that if he's distracted in all sorts of worldly, kingly affairs. He's going to appear to him in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam, as he appeared to his grandfather. And so this was Krishna's plan. See, and also with the devotee, sometimes what happens is Krishna acts towards him, not just for the devotee, but for the world. There's another verse like that. They said, just as to teach the daughter-in-law, the mother teaches the daughter. Because the daughter-in-law is coming to the house. She doesn't have a relationship with her. So she can't instruct her so directly. So she teaches the daughter. In the same way, Krishna instructs other devotees through the pure devotee. He instructs the world. Just like Prabhupada's life. He went through difficulties, but those difficulties were not just for him. Those difficulties were to show the world how the pure devotee is sincere, how he is acting for the pleasure of Krishna, and therefore, even in difficulty, he continues to become Krishna's servant. He continues to serve. So to manifest the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna put Maharaj Parikit in this difficult circumstance. And because he was a devotee, he was happy. Let me die, if that's Krishna's will. I am satisfied. And same thing with Arjuna. So these verses are quite interesting.
Bhakti rudendriya prana mano buddhim muparatam stana trayat param praptam brahma bhutam avikriyam.
The muni's sense organs, breath, mind, and intelligence were all restrained from material activities. and he was situated in a trance apart from the three, wakefulness, dream, and unconsciousness. Having achieved a transcendental position qualitatively equal to Supreme Absolute Truth. So this describes the consciousness of this sage. So this is interesting. It says, Pratirudha, he restrained Indriya, the senses, Prana, the air, Mana, the mind, Buddhim, the intelligence, Upadatam, an active. So this is the level of self-realization, that the consciousness is not distracted by the external coverings. And when you cease to become distracted from the external coverings and cease to identify with your body, your mind, your material intelligence, your ego, when you stop to identify with them, you come in contact with the soul or the self. And therefore, they have these three states, wakefulness, dream, and unconsciousness. It's because he's situated trance. I forgot what it, this is also described sometimes where you go beyond these and you come in contact with the self. When the material consciousness, the material aspect of consciousness stops. That's why the Bhagavad Gita, when the senses are controlled, the super soul is at reach. So he was in contact with the self. Prabhupada, he discusses some things in the Prabhupada. I was trying to understand this purport. It's not an easy one, but it's all about realizing the self. And Prabhupada discusses three processes. Jnana, by knowledge, you try to understand transcendence, by distinguishing. And then yoga, Prabhupada said, by physiological and psychological functions. So you control the body and the mind and try to distance yourself from everything and realize the self. And then bhakti, which is acting on the platform of the self. And Prabhupada also discusses in the Bhagavad Gita also we have the information of the gradual development of perception from matter to the living entity. So it's anamoya. You identify with your sustenance or food, and then pranamoya, and then it goes on, and finally anandamoya, where you ultimately, this is jnanamoya, you ultimately just identify with the self, which is anandamoya, which is pleasurable, because the self is a receptacle of the Lord's pleasure potency. So this sense is there to the perception of matter is transcended to still subtle states of senses. The senses are transcended to the subtler mind and the breathing activities, and gradually the intelligence. Beyond the intelligence, the living soul is realized. This is what the Muni was doing.
Vipakirna chitachanam roravena janena cha vishushyat tala udakam tatabhutam ayachita.
The sage in meditation was covered by the skin of a stag, and long compressed hair was scattered all over him. That sounds really attractive. The king, whose palate was dry from thirst, asked him for water. So Prabhupada keeps on talking about it's providential. It's such a unique happening. Krishna arranged that he's dying of thirst and he's at a hermitage and there's a sage translating. Marj Cricket was thus placed in an awkward position so that gradually the Srimad Bhagavatam could be revealed.
Alabda Trina Bhumya Deer Asam praptarja sunrita abhigyatam ivatmanam manyamanas chakopaha.
The king, not received by any formal welcome by means of being offered a seat, place, water, and sweet addresses, considered himself neglected, and so thinking he became angry. So Prabhupada discusses, on one platform it was not wrong to become angry. Because even in any, Prabhupada talks about the law of reception in the codes of the Vedic principles state that even if an enemy is received at home, he must be received with all respects. And it's not dependent even on your material situation, because he didn't receive any, even you can offer sunrita, you can offer sweet words, a seat, trina, a seat of straw, and bhumi, and a place here, please sit down here, argya, water for reception. So it was not, it was not wrong to become angry. Was not a natural prophecy, but the king was not less than a great saint, so his becoming angry and taking action was astonishing. So it must be accepted that it was ordained by the supreme will of the Lord. The king was a great devotee of the Lord, and the saint was also as good as the king. But by the will of the Lord, the circumstances were so created that they became ways to the king's becoming unattached to family connection and governmental activities, and thus becoming completely surrendered unto the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. The merciful Lord sometimes creates such awkward positions for his pure devotees in order to drag them towards himself from the mirror of material existence. But outwardly, the situations appear to be frustrating to the devotees. The devotees of the Lord are always under the protection of the Lord, and in any condition, frustration or success, the Lord is the supreme guide for the devotee. The pure devotees therefore accept all conditions of frustrations as blessings from the Lord. So when those circumstances arise, he understands the Lord is giving him some benediction, preparing him for some benediction. When the difficulties come, the Lord is preparing him for some benediction. If he can maintain his faith in Krishna's supremacy and benevolence. And then he'll see at the end of the difficulty, it's just, see, destiny's moving. It's just Krishna creating one ideal situation after another for our enlightenment, based on who we are, because Krishna knows who we are. And who we are is not a simple thing. Just like in Brahma Vimoha Lila, where Krishna returned, when Brahma returned, he saw that Krishna had duplicated all the cowherd boys and calves, and then it describes what he had to duplicate. He had to duplicate their lunch bags and their clothes and their proclivities and habits. So just imagine someone duplicating your habits. Every response we give, there's so much knots and entanglements behind our irrational response to what happened to our circumstances. Just imagine duplicating our whole psychological history since time immemorial. So Krishna did that. Because even the pure devotees have different psychologies. It's described in the Nectar of Devotion. There's different types of mentalities of pure devotees. It's described. It's very intricate. So that's what destiny means. It's a movement of matter to respond to us, to purify us. And you can imagine, to get us to the right conceptions and ideas, what type of explosions have to happen externally to give us the right ideas. And then when Krishna may see that we have some hint of self-realization, he may work quicker and faster. We have to become detached.
Abhutapurva sahasa shutridhyam Ardi Tatvana Brahmanam Pratyabhud Brahman Maisaro Manya Evacha.
O Brahmana, the king's anger and envy directed towards the Brahmin sage were unprecedented. being that circumstances had made him hungry and thirsty. So it says, abhut purva, abhuta purva. It is wonderful, it's unprecedented that Brahmanam prati, he became against the Brahmana, abhut, abhut, and he became manyu, angry, and matsara, he became envious. So this was unprecedented, especially a king. You know, especially Prabhupada says a sage, when undoubtedly he said, knew well that Brahmanas, sage women, and old men are always beyond the jurisdiction of punishment. So this was just a law. So for him to become angry and envious with a sage, it may be Kali, okay, and some other Kshatriya, okay, but that he became, this was, the culprit was a Brahmin. It was unprecedented. And the devotee is never envious of anyone. The only justification for Maharaj Prickett's behavior is that it was ordained by the Lord.
Satu Brahma Rishiram Se Gatasu Murga Uragam Rusha Vanir Gachandanuskotya Nidaya Puramagata.
While leaving, the king, being so insulted, picked up a lifeless snake with his bow and angrily placed it on the shoulder of the sage. Then he returned to his palace. The king thus treated the sage tit for tat, although he was never accustomed to such silly actions. In the case of mother, it's unprecedented. Tit for tat. A great sage shouldn't be tit for tat. I remember I was attending one GVC meeting. The GVC was like punishing someone heavily. And then and the people had done something wrong, but they were getting very, very heavy. And then Trivikram Swami stood up and he said, it was funny too, he stood up and he has a way of being very sincere. He said, you know, you guys, and you're acting like a bunch of Vaishyas, you know, you're supposed to be Brahmins and Kshatriyas, you know. I don't know if I should say this now, you know, because Tamal got me years ago, gotta forgive, He said, what is this tit for tat? You know, we're supposed to be Brahmins and Kshatriyas. Maybe we have to erase that. But the mood was there. You know, I felt he was Shastravit in his own way. Come on, what's going on? This is not for Brahmins and Kshatriyas, you know. He got me, I'm going to get him.
Okay, I think there's one more verse.
What did angry GVC did then?
What?
Esha
kim nipratashesha karuna malatekshana misha samadhyar ahoshvit kim nusyat shatrabandubi.
Upon returning, he began to contemplate and argue within himself whether the sage had actually been in meditation with senses concentrated and eyes closed, or whether he had just been feigning trance just to avoid receiving a lower kshatriya. So Prabhupada said, this is so interesting, the king, being a devotee of the Lord, did not approve of his own action. And thus he began to wonder whether the sage was really in trance or was just pretending in order to avoid receiving the king, who is a Kshatriya and therefore lower in rank. Repentance comes in the mind of a good soul as soon as he commits something wrong. Very powerful. And then, of course, the same thing. It's the plan of the Lord so that the Bhagavatam could be spoken. And Prabhupada says how important it was that the Bhagavatam be spoken. He said this specific pastime of the Lord has a special, he talks about, because the Bhagavatam has the Ras Lila in it. And Prabhupada said this specific pastime of the Lord has special significance because anyone who properly learns from this particular pastime of the Lord will certainly be dissuaded from mundane sex desire and be placed on the path of sublime devotional service to the Lord. The pure devotee's mundane frustration is meant to elevate the devotee to a higher transcendental position. And then again, he describes about Arjuna's situation. So the situation all was therefore planned by the Lord. It was planned by the Lord. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti, the plan was made by the will of the Lord, and by the will of the Lord, the situation of frustration was created. The plan was that for his so-called misdeed, the king could be cursed by an inexperienced Brahmin boy infected by the influence of Kali, and thus the king would leave his hearth and home for good. His connection with Sukadeva would enable the presentation of the great Srimad Bhagavatam, which is considered to be the book incarnation of the Lord. This book incarnation of the Lord gives much fascinating information of the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. Like his Rasleela with his spiritual cowherd damsels in Vrajabhumi. This specific pastime of the Lord has special significance because anyone who properly learns about this particular pastime of the Lord will certainly be dissuaded from mundane sex desire and be placed on the path of sublime devotional service to the Lord. So it's so wonderful, this Srimad Bhagavatam, and therefore he had to be put in this situation, and therefore he had to leave his kingdom, which was the initial question of the reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 18, Text 32. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Tasya putro tatejasvi viharan balako bhakai. Pragyagam papitam tatam shutva tatvedama bhavit. The sage had a son who was very powerful, being a Brahmin son. While he was playing with inexperienced boys, he heard of his father's distress, which was occasioned by the king. Then and there, the boy spoke as follows. Purport. Due to Maharaj Prickett's good government, even a boy of tender age who is playing with other inexperienced boys can become powerful as a qualified Brahmin. The boy was known as Sringi, and he achieved good training in Brahmacharya by his father so that he could be as powerful as a Brahmin even at that age. But because the age of Kali was seeking an opportunity to spoil the cultural heritage of the four orders of life, the inexperienced boy gave a chance for the age of Kali to enter into the field of Vedic culture. Hatred of the lower orders of life began from this Brahmin boy under the influence of Kali, and thus cultural life began to dwindle day after day. The first victim of Brahminical injustice was Maharaj Prickett, and thus the potencies given by the king against the onslaught of Kali was Lakin. Omiyanati Madandasya Gananjana Shavakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Pancha Kalpa Taru Bhyascha Kripa Sindhu Baye Vicha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Today's verse. So now the story is continuing, and the son of Shamaka Rishi called Sringi, he hears about it. And It's interesting here. It says, Ati, Tejasvi, extremely powerful. Just like there's a word, Atirati. There's Maharati. Maharati can fight with 1,000 people. And Atirati means he has astras. He can fight with so many people. So this is Ati Tejasvi. He was very, very powerful. Because of his birth and his training, he achieved good training in brahmacharya by his father. He observed celibacy. And Prabhupada in the purport explains because of Maharaj Prickett's good government, because he was maintaining Van Ashram. So therefore, it was a good manager, a good leader. Under the guidance of the Brahmins, Maharaj Prickett, at the very beginning, what did it say? It said, the very first thing describing Maharaj Prickett's rule was he took siksha from the best of the Brahmins, the most excellent of the Brahmins he took siksha from. He was a Mahabhagavat. He had all good qualities. So in such a government, led by such a great king as Maharaj Prickett, there was good brahmachari training. There was good training, and people became very powerful, and they were very pure. Can't imagine the tejas, the shakti of such a person. But here, he was still a boy. It says, Arbakai, who were childish. He was still playing, so he was inexperienced, but he had this power. And we're going to see what happens. Maybe I'll just speak and then we can read the verses. So what happens is that he curses Maharaj Prickett. We know that. And this is the beginning of Kali Yuga. This is the beginning of Kali Yuga, when people guide by their force of their position and not by their qualities. This is always the danger, because we need institutions to run society. So when you have institutions to run society, there must be some decision-making process for the society to run efficiently, and that's called a hierarchy. There must be some decision-making process in a society. But the tendency is, because it's hierarchical, for people to rule not on the basis of their qualification, but on the basis of their position. Especially the Brahmins. This is very, very dangerous, because actually they don't have a managerial position. So this is how Kali Yuga, we'll see how Kali Yuga enters. That the Brahmins, they lose their power or tejas when they don't act in the proper way. And that specifically means when they take advantage of their position by birthright. The Brahmins are on the top of society. So when they take advantage of that and they don't act in a cultured way, when a person is in charge and he doesn't protect and show kindness, and rather he exploits, then he loses his power and tejas. He loses his respect. And this is how Kali, it's very interesting how Kali Yuga entered, because the Brahmins, by Sringi, his example is he was very powerful, but he lacked the culture. He lacked the culture. He didn't know the intricacies of good behavior for people who were supposedly under him. And therefore, because he had this false prestige due to his position, and due to that false prestige, he behaved in an improper way. He lost his tejas or power. And when the Brahmins lose their power, then the society has no head. Because the Brahmins give the direction. And the Kshatriyas enforce that clear direction. So when the Brahmins lose their tejas and power and their authority because they lack culture, then the society has no direction. And they can't rule the society by their influence, by their power. And then the Borijan actually described this now. He said that the Brahmins set the principles. The Brahmins are free to study Shastra and to apply it and to teach. So they're very, very acute on how things should be done. Just like right now, it's controversy in our society. So it's the controversy. What should we do? What is the guru? What is his position? How is it applied within ISKCON? What is its relationship? There has to be a class of men that are free and peaceful to study the Shastra and cultivate the mode of goodness so that they can have a clear vision of what to do. So this is the Brahmins. The Brahmins, and this is actually what Prabhupada wanted. I know when he started the Gurukul, he was talking about a class of Brahmins. This is ISKCON's prime duty, a class of Brahmins. People who are, Prabhupada said, vidvan in bhakti marg, who will learn it, and who have character. That's why Prabhupada said, when they ask him, well, how do you train the Brahmins? And, you know, he didn't, the other classes is, it's by their, you know, their activities. But the Brahmin, it's Brahma Karma Swabhavajam. He works by, the Brahmin works by his, by it's in Shamo Dhamastapo Saucham Shanti Arjavam Ajam Yanavigyan. He works. His work is actually to cultivate and exhibit qualities of peacefulness, of tolerance, of self-control, of knowledge, of realization, of simplicity, of truthfulness, of cleanliness. He's supposed to exhibit this, and therefore he has so much Shakti. So the Brahmins are free. Their whole service is to understand the truth and be in a position so that people want the truth from them and have faith in them. And this is the whole basis of society going properly, that it has the proper direction. It knows what to do. If you don't know what to do, then everything you can't go in the proper direction. Nothing will go properly. So this is the class of Brahmins. And then the Kshatriyas, they're supposed to enforce it. And they also the Brahmins cultivate the qualities to get and disseminate knowledge, and the Kshatriyas cultivate the qualities to enforce and protect those principles. So this cooperation must be there. And the way the cooperation works is specifically the Brahmins cultivate such qualities that the Kshatriyas are eager to, they have faith in their advice, and they're eager to take their advice and execute it. So this whole cooperation between the Brahmins and Kshatriyas is the basis of the society running in the proper way. But because Sringi was uncultured and didn't treat the Kshatriyas in the proper way, why? Simply because they were under him in a hierarchical structure. He lost his Shakti. I was thinking, even in the Vedic marriage applied to the West, I was never married, so I mean, I don't have the highest realizations on this, but it seemed to what happened in a basic that people took the Vedic structure. But the part of the Vedic structure they took in marriage was just the hierarchical part. that the man is in a superior decision making process to the woman. But they took it, but without the culture. And if you look in Indian culture, although the man has that position, it's not the only basis on which the relationship is defined. The woman is, you see in an Indian household, the woman is revered and respected. You know, as a mother, her wisdom, so many things, she's respected. So therefore, because the person on top has that respect for the woman in the Vedic system, because it's not just the worth and value of the person is not just determined by who has a higher decision-making process. But you look at the person as a Vaishnava, you look at a person for the role that they do, for the service that they do. So because that relationship was there, then the man actually had, of course, the culture was that he also had the tejas, he had the power. Because of his appreciation and his mood of kindness and support. But sometimes in the West, without understanding the culture, we just took the hierarchical structure. So the man just tried to tell the woman what to do, but he lost all the shakti because he didn't do it with the kindness and the respect. And plus, without the culture was there. So this is it. The leader has to have brahminical tejas. I was just traveling on the parikram with Radhanath Swami. And it says, you know, there's like 750 people, and they're big, big industrialists, etc. But he has so much brahminical tejas because he's thinking that they're his Prabhu. He's thinking that he's a servant of the Vaishnava. He's not thinking, I am guru, I am ruler, I am in charge. And he's detached, and he's concerned for them, and he treats them with respect, not just that I'm the guru and these are all my disciples. But he looks, this man is such a great Vaishnava, and here's a man who's very competent, industrialist, but he's like a Vaishnava, he's better devotee than me. And then because he has that respect and that broad vision, and these are the brahmacharis, they're more learned than me. He's thinking in a humble way and cultivating those qualities of peaceful, tolerance, self-control, learning. Then he has so much power, and he actually, because he's free from the management, he has the vision. And they know he has the vision. He has the qualities to enforce the vision. And not that he has the qualities, so they listen to him, and then they have the power to enforce the vision. So you have a well-managed structure. So it's kind of like I was thinking that yesterday, even without thinking of how it was actually Van Ashram. You have the Brahmin, and he's respected for his qualities. And then you have these people who can do things, who he has the vision and he sets the rules and they enforce them. But what is his power? It's not because he's their boss. It's because of their respect for him. And you can see when it gets vitiated, when the person on top... See, Van Ashram also is very scientifically. If you want to be number one, then you have to be renounced. And if you want all the power and wealth and control, then you have to take the number two position. There's no having so-called, you can have your cake and eat it. If you want to be on the top, you have to be renounced and live simply. And if you want the power, then you have to be under the Brahmins. So when this brahminical tejas is so important, and when we don't act with culture and the proper respect and know how to deal, the culture means that not that you're in charge, you're dealing with Vaishnavas. Sometimes Prabhupada, how he would see his own disciples as being sent by his spiritual master. You see Prabhupada's brahminical tejas by his renunciation and his qualities, people are willing to follow. And therefore, right, like with Jayadvaita, you know, you wish Prabhupada was here because in a 15-minute class, he can clear up all controversies. You can avoid all these meetings and gossip. So very, very much Prabhupada wanted us to cultivate a brahminical class of men who can set the rules and have the shakti to inspire people to follow their direction and vision. So Bhurijan described this very nice. So then so Kali Yuga begins when the Brahmins exploit and they don't respect the Kshatriyas. This is the basis of culture respect. So we'll see that Sringi doesn't respect him. Why? Because he's under me. Not thinking that he's a Vaishnava, a great king, a human being. And when they don't respect the Kshatriyas, who need encouragement. Kshatriyas need encouragement because they naturally have that little type pride, so they need encouragement. So when they're not respected and they're not encouraged, they become independent. And then because they have independent, because they don't have the influence of goodness, then they act without restraint. In one sense, you can look at it like this. The Brahmins are thoughtful, but they lack a little sometimes initiative because they're thoughtful, they're peaceful. Of course, they're pure, but anyway. And the Kshatriyas, they lack restraint. So you put the two together, it's very good. But if the Kshatriyas don't have the Brahmins, they act without restraint. They act expediently, they don't act according to principles, because auspiciousness comes from Dharma, so they'll tend to take shortcuts and act irreligious in ways and lack restraint, empty-headed expansion, exploit, and the society then has so much difficulty. And then when the Kshatriyas don't have that influence of goodness to restrain them, then the Vaishyas revolt. And when the Vaishyas revolt, then they exploit people by misusing the money. And then they take the money for themselves. They don't pay their taxes. And we can see in capitalism, the richest people pay the least taxes. You know, there's all kinds of ways that they exploit. And then the Sudras finally seeing that they're doing all the work, and everyone else is living so nicely, then they revolt. And then you get West Bengal.
French Revolution, Communist Revolution.
Yeah.
The Workers' Revolution.
Yeah. So this is how Kali entered. He entered so intelligently through the Brahmins, who lost their tejas by not having the proper culture and respect. And therefore, just seeing their position, or just seeing their authority on the basis of position and not qualities. And therefore, in a marriage, if this is done, the man will lose his power. In any position, in guru-disciple relationship, he can lose his, if he just sees on the basis of his position, not on his qualities, in terms of a government.
There is an example when Vasishtha, Rāja Guru,
yeah.
He advised Bharat, your father, with full consciousness, has given me this big empire, with islands and oceans and everything.
Yeah.
You accept it and be the king. Probably he was trying the sense of propriety of Bharat. And Bharat did not raise his voice in protest, but he politely declined, I can't do that. This Rama, this by convention, the eldest son, is as the heir to the throne when his father, the king, dies. That is politely he did to the Rajguru. And when his mother advised him, well, I have done all these things, arranged these things for you and be the king. You are monstrous in order to spoil everything here you have come. I refuse. That he, with loud protest, he refused, abused his mother. But in the Guru Vasishtha, he politely declined. Because Vasishtha was probably.
And what is the point?
You accept this kingdom. Bharat politely declined it. The two boons that...
But what's the point in relationship to this?
Relationship, the point is, he said, it is the duty of the Brahmins.
Yeah.
Have I been caught there?
No, no.
It is the duty of the Brahmins to lead.
Yeah.
And Khatriyas to...
Oh, you're giving the example that he politely...
Politely declined. Vasishtha was perhaps not advising him really. He was probably trying his sense of propriety.
He was following not just the words of Vasishtha, but the meaning.
Meaning of it.
Right? This is the... We learned these
Another
important lessons.
Another example on the opposite side.
Yeah.
It is the duty of the legislative to form rules. And the duty of the executive, that is the government, to apply those rules and reign and run the country. As you say, Brahmin and Kotriyo.
Yeah.
In the present day also, it is in a broad scale, it is the same thing continuing. But as we see that the chambers of commerce, the Martians, they are revolting, they are doing the opposite way, and the Shudras, they are trying to capture power.
Same.
Like this, continuing more or less the same way in the broader basis. But it is an example when the Brahmin tried his sense of propriety and saw that Bharat is the right person, he has gone the right way.
Okay, we're going to go on. Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Aho Vadharma Palanam Pivnam Bali Bhujamiva Swaminyagam Yadasanam Dwarapanam Sunamiva. The Brahmin's son Sringi said, "Oh, just look at the sins of the rulers, who like crows and watchdogs at the door, perpetrate sins against their masters, contrary to the principles governing servants." So Prabhupada describes the caste system. A son of a medical practitioner has a very good chance to become a qualified medical practitioner. So the caste system is quite scientific. So there's something in it. The son, though, must take advantage of the father's qualification and thus become a Brahmin, a medical practitioner, and not otherwise. Without becoming qualified, one cannot become a Brahmin or medical practitioner, and that is the verdict of all scriptures and social orders. Herein, Sringi, a qualified son of a great Brahmin, attained the required brahminical power both by birth and by training, but he was lacking in culture because he was an inexperienced boy. By the influence of Kali, the son of a Brahmin became puffed up with brahminical power and thus wrongly compared Maharaj Prickett to crows and watchdogs. Thus, the downfall of the brahminical powers began as they gave importance to birthright without culture, position without culture. You lose your power. The downfall of the Brahmin caste began in the age of Kali. And since the Brahmins are the heads of society, all orders of society began to deteriorate. The beginning of rabbinical deterioration was highly deplored by the father of Sringi, as we'll find out. So this is how Kali enters. This is how the social system becomes vitiated. So this is why Prabhupada so much stress the training of Brahmins, that ISKCON should be the Brahmins for society. We should be so cultured and so powerful and so learned and so detached that we will have influence over the people that are ruling and managing society. What to speak of our own institution? So this was Prabhupada's vision. And we've seen his old example of how much power he had by his qualification. We think Prabhupada dira janapriyo. He was dear to the gentle and the ruffians. So many of Prabhupada's disciples were ruffians, actually. Mm-hmm. And you'd be amazed how these people would have so much obedience to him. And therefore, he would set the rules, and then things, and the vision. This is the most important, especially in a spiritual movement, the most important thing for success is that the institution has the proper vision. In whatever, even if it's a temple, Because the proper vision means that it means the desire and order of Krishna. And you can see, no matter how much sophisticated the management system is, if they don't have the right vision, it fails. Just like they in ISKCON, it was introduced, 7 habits of highly successful people. So it's actually a good system to set priorities. But if you don't have the right vision of what those priorities are, then it fails anyway. It fails anyway. And what did Prabhupada carry from his guru that gave him success? It wasn't the managerial skills, although he was expert at everything. It was that he knew what to do. He knew what his guru wanted. He knew what Krishna wanted. He had the right vision. So the first thing that you have to get in order in any institution, any part of the institution, is the right vision of what to do. Because if that's not there, then Krishna will not allow success. He'll not allow success. And therefore, it's so important in society to have a class of Brahmins. The educational institution is the one institution in society that's supposed to deal with all other institutions. And that's why the educational system is the most important. Because education deals with even agriculture, it deals with music, it deals with politics, this is what their university is supposed to be. They're supposed to maintain the culture of society. This is why Prabhupada wanted an educational institution here. It should maintain the culture. How you cook, how you behave, what you do, how you manage, there's different departments of all. This is what Van Ashram College ultimately means. The knowledge must be protected, and therefore the society must have a class of people who are Shamod, Namastapos, Salchimshan, who can be peaceful to study the scriptures, cultivate the mode of goodness, and therefore enforce this knowledge. And to the extent that ISKCON has failed to do this, is the extent that we are failing in fulfilling Prabhupada's mission. Because we don't know what to do, and then you don't have the Shakti to do it. So this is so important. From my little study of the Srimad Bhagavatam in the last year, understanding that it's Vedyam Vastavam Atra Vastu, that it's the subject matter about the truth, you know, you can see how essential it is that leadership is fixed in this knowledge, some way or another, either by themselves or by the submission to those who have it. And therefore, Prabhupada in the Bhagavad Gita, in the commentary on the verse, Evam Parampara Praptam Imam Rajarshio Viduhu, Sakale Neha, that the Parampara, he said that the leaders knew Bhagavad Gita. Do you remember what it said? By education, culture, knowledge, there's something in the purport. Because they need this touch for this truth, and it's based on moving the society towards realizing that truth. So that's the first objective. And so we're going to watch the downfall. Brahmanai Shatrabandurhi Griha Palo Narupata Sakatam Tadgrihe Dvasta Savandam Voktam Arati. The descendants of the kingly orders are definitely designated as watchdogs, and they must keep themselves on the door. On what grounds can dogs enter the house and claim to dine with the master on the same plate? I am higher than you. I am in a superior position than you. So he says, Katam, on what grounds? Tat grihe, in the home of the master. Sabhandam, in the same pot. Bhoktum, to eat. Griha pala, like a watchdog. This mentality of false prestige is the cause of downfall of the perfect social order. And we can see that in the beginning it was started by the inexperienced son of a Brahmin. As the dog is never allowed to enter within the room and hearth, although it is reared by the master. Similarly, according to Sringi, the king had no right to enter the house of Samaka Rishi. After the departure of Lord Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, and the supreme ruler of everyone, these upstarts flourish. Our protector being gone, therefore I myself shall take up this matter and punish them. Just witness my power. Prabhupada talks about false incarnation. It's almost like he's after Krishna's incarnation, his disappearance. They have flourished, these upstarts. Therefore, I shall take the matter and punish them. The son of the Rishi, his eyes red hot with anger, touched the water of the river Kaushika while speaking to his playmates and discharged the following thunderbolt of words. The Brahmin's son cursed the king thus, on the seventh day from today, a snake bird will bite the most wretched one of that dynasty, Maharaj Cricket, because of him having broken the laws of etiquette, Maryadam, by insulting my father. Thus the beginning of misuse of brahminical power began, and gradually the Brahmins in the age of Kali became devoid of both brahminical powers and culture. So first, misuse of culture. You don't know how to behave, to respect others. And then power is lost. Personality of Kali conquered the Brahmin boy first and gradually the other caste. Thus the whole scientific system of the orders of society in this age has assumed the form of a vitiated caste system, which is now being uprooted by another class of men similarly influenced by the age of Kali. One should see the root cause of vitiation and not try to condemn the system as it is without knowledge of its scientific values. Is there any questions? Mataji, any comments?
I had a lecture, it's a conversation, Prabhupada was discussing how the materialistic people state buildings, we go to the yoga buildings as Vaishnavas. We're not interested to build such big buildings. So then he commented, he said the Kshatriyas, they're interested in constructing big buildings, and the Brahmanas are interested in constructing the character, which is what he was saying.
Same point.
Yeah, same point, which is what he was trying to tell the devotees, you know, why should we work? Why should we work hard? That our work is to be thoughtful. And lazy intelligence is like, this is best. So why should we work hard like cats and dogs?
In the verse in Bhagavad Gita where it discusses Brahma Karma Swabhavajam,
right,
they work by qualities.
Yes.
But you know, the others, they have specific works that are listed towards them, how they work. Brother Jana?
If a Brahmin works by his qualities, therefore it doesn't matter what work he does in one sense. Like in terms like Prabhupada didn't work as a Brahmin throughout his life, he was a businessman. The Bhaktivinoda Thakur was like a magistrate.
Yeah.
They didn't like do, you know, they didn't carry like water pots and do jagas or whatever. So does that mean that the kind of work, if a person is qualified as a Brahmin, therefore it doesn't really matter what kind of work he does physically?
Well, in their... Well, according to Bhagavad Gita, besides these two examples that you gave, well, Prabhupada, of course, besides these examples, it says that one should not try to do another's work. And it gives, there's three reasons why one should not do another's work. I can try to remember. You should do your work even faultily than in others, even if you can do it better. So let's say someone is a sannyasi. And he's, you know, he's not that learned, and he's struggling, and but he's a sannyasi. But he's a great businessman. Just somehow or other he took, you know. But if he does business, then what happens? If he does business, then no one will trust him. And people will distrust the sannyas order also. If I had my Bhagavad Gita, I gave three reasons. I thought about this. Why one should not do another's duty, even if he can do it perfectly. When I took sannyas, Satsarup Maharaj told me, very nice, he told me, avoid politics and business. Because our society needs people whom we can trust. So even if I was so good at politics and I could do business, even if I could do them good, then what happens is you can't do your other service in which you're designated, in which people look up to you, and which is needed. You need people who can be trusted and inspire people. So even if we can do another thing perfectly, we should avoid it. We should do our duty. Now, there may be exceptions due to time, but we should keep the ideal in mind. We should also understand the dynamics of it. That it's better to just do your duty if possible. It's very unfortunate. I know one brahminically minded person, but he needs money. He does brahminical work, but he needs money. And sometimes the ways he gets money, ruins the relationship. Like, people really respect him for his advice, but the way he gets money, which sometimes through them, they become confused, or it's just like he's great, but this is the one thing, and it's unfortunate. So we should have a class of people, a society should be so structured that a class of people is actually supported as Brahmins. And like Vasu Ghosh was telling me, that he may take his son out and put him in the school. So I said, well, they charge tuition. It's like a Madhva Brahmin. He said, no. They're not charged tuition. This is not the culture. Because we may have to charge tuition. It may be practical. But in the real culture, the society will support by donations. Naturally, the Brahmin will live simply so that people will know that they're giving it for his maintenance, not for his material enjoyment. So if the people are qualified, it's something to think about. And then they'll be supported for their work and respected. So to do another's duty, even if you can do it better, it has so many consequences. One, it denigrates the order. Or let's say there's and it's also difficult to do another's duty generally. And the other thing is, you're acting whimsically. This is the other point. And it's always dangerous to act whimsically. So even if you can do someone's other's duty better, by transgressing the natural shastric rules on something, then this thing may be better for you. You may be able to do business, but then you'll say, yeah, and then I'll do this, and I'll associate with, once whimsy enters the mind, it's very dangerous. So in a Vedic system, they so much discourage people from acting whimsically. So even if you can do another duty better, don't do it, because it's not your duty. Do your duties. Do the shastra. So I think for these three reasons, it confuses the social order. It denigrates each class. People are acting whimsically, so it's dangerous. And Prabhupada said, generally, you can't anyway do another duty. Do you want to know?
Well, the point is also there that a Vaishnava can be in any position.
Right.
And so Prabhupada was a Vaishnava. There are examples in Chaitanya Leela. Mukunda was a doctor, and he was behaving just like a doctor. But then when one day he fell off from his asana in ecstasy, and then the Muslim king realized his real position.
Hmm.
That even though he seemed like an ordinary person, and also Pundarik Vidyanidhi seemed like an ordinary person, but Gadadhar was even confused. But then after, he realized the position. So a Vaishnava can be in any position in society and be transcendental.
But still, they will try to respect the social order.
Yeah, they do. Like Krishna also, he behaved according to his...
Yeah.
And Prabhupada also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Parashuram went out of his way to punish the Kshatriyas because they behaved in a very improper way. It was necessary for the demand of the time and the place to bring back order by punishing these irregular Kshatriyas.
Okay, we're going to have to finish because we went a little bit late today and I don't like to do that, but Prabhupada also gave the example of Parashuram and Vashishta as an example, but it's not easy to do.
No.
Okay, we'll end here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.